Interesting people, thought-provoking conversations, nutrition for your brain. Journey through the minds of the world's top performers and discover what it really takes to achieve your highest version. This is the Danny Miranda Podcast.
Matt Kelly, you're a beast, man. I was doing research for my episode with Iman Godzi, which is widely acclaimed and people seem to really love it. And when I was doing research for that episode, I came across and stumbled across your episode with him. And yeah. I was thinking to myself, wow, this guy is really good at interviewing. This guy's really... And then I look and you've only done like 40 episodes or something like that. And it's incredible.
I think so, 30 now. Yeah. Iman episode's the most viewed by far.
Yeah.
For probably many reasons. Yeah.
But
definitely is.
So when I stumbled across that, I saw you were following me and I was like, wow, this is interesting. So I'm grateful we can finally make this happen. And thanks for being here, my man.
Yeah, even though I was half an hour late because I got the time wrong, but apologies. Yeah, good to be here. I feel like the e-com and kind of Twitter sphere with all these podcasts and shit, it's a very small world, but it's an interesting one. And yeah, I suppose I started my pod like a little over 6 months ago now. And as I was just alluding to before, I guess I've built a little bit of a very small niche cult following, it feels like. Certainly not to the level of someone like Iman or many other people yet. But I never really thought of myself as like a host or anything. But then I guess I just was quite good at speaking honestly about things in this space. And it seems to resonate with people. So yeah, and now I'm jumping on the other end, which I quite enjoy doing now and then. So
yeah. That's what I really appreciate about you is your vulnerability and willingness to put yourself out there. And I'm sure we'll touch on that, but I really want to start with an unfamiliar place to a lot of interviews I've seen you, which is you were almost a junior champion in rowing and we were thinking about the Olympics. So yeah,
that is true.
Talk to me about that part of your journey.
Yeah, so to clarify, I was a twice national champion as a junior rower. I wasn't almost, I was, when I was 16. I mean, to anyone in the rowing world, they'd probably laugh because I'm talking about achievements from 10 years ago. But yeah, rowing was my entire life from age like 12 to 18 and then a little bit again when I was like 20 at uni, but not seriously. So mainly between like the age of 12 and 18. And I say my entire life because it was the only thing. I mean, I had like hobbies like playing music and shit, but rowing quickly became my entire life because I was training like twice a day as a teenager. Like other than school, it was basically all I did was train and race. And I got pretty good at it, I guess. I've always been kind of a decent overall athlete, I would say. But rowing was the only thing I ever like excelled at to an elite junior level, certainly. But yeah, when I was like 16, I was definitely thinking, I was absolutely obsessed with like watching like Redgrave documentaries and shit, who, if anyone follows Ryan, will know is like the greatest of all time. And yeah, it was my entire life, I suppose. It was my first obsession and it taught me a lot. And I definitely cite rowing as a kind of the foundation of how I view a lot of things in life now, probably. And yeah, it's not something I do anymore because it's brutal and you can make no money doing it. And it's just, I got more interested in building online businesses, but I still have some very good friends who are in the Olympic squad right now and going for like Paris 24 and stuff. And I had James Rudkin, who was an Olympic athlete, on the podcast, but people seem to fucking hate that episode because it wasn't to do with e-commerce, which I learned pretty quick. But for me, it was an interesting episode. And for a few people back home that I used to row with. I also had David Bruce, who rowed the Atlantic, who I used to row with as a junior. So that was the connection there. But again, people didn't like that episode because it wasn't e-commerce, even though it's like the most badass shit I've ever seen. But yeah, rowing was a massive part of my life. Isn't anymore, but still something I look back on fondly and still follow. Like the Oxford Cambridge boat race was 2 days ago and I still like follow that shit on like YouTube and so on. Maybe I think, what if I'd done that instead of doing what I do now, but I don't think it was ultimately for me, like long term. But yeah, he was a massive part of my youth, and I probably haven't spoke about that huge amount in like the public domain, because again, it's a pretty niche sport, especially outside the UK, outside the UK and US really, and people don't really seem to care. So I have to give the people what they want and just speak about econ. But yeah.
What was that like, losing your identity for something that you did so consistently and were clearly really good at?
Yeah, so when I actually quit rowing when I was like 18, I was 17, 18 for like a few years, because I wanted to explore like making YouTube videos and like getting hench in the gym, which is probably what a lot of people do when they're like 18. I kind of got obsessed with the idea of being like a fitness model for a while, which I never pursued by any means. Then went to uni and I got back into rowing for about a year while at uni, but not to the same level at the time as I was as a junior, because at university rowing is when it gets a lot more serious. And at that point, I'd started to really delve into like e-com and building brands. One of my early brands was actually, I say brand, I mean, I did it for like 4 months, was a leggings brand specifically for rowing. So I don't know if anyone's, I probably haven't spoken about that much, but it's called Wavy Leggings. And I was just making products that I wanted at the time in a rowing case. But that was the last time I ever rowed and got in a boat. I still go on the rowing machine now and then, but not with very fond memories, because it's a disgustingly brutal sport, which a lot of people probably don't realize that have never done it. But yeah, I mean, yeah, I went through probably a few years of between like the age of maybe 18, 19, 20 before I properly like delved into e-commerce, of just being a bit lost, I suppose, which probably a lot of people are at that kind of age. Like I went to uni, never wanted to be there. And then eventually kind of stumbled into the e-com space when I was like, well, I guess 19 originally, but with no success until I was about 21, which is when I eventually left uni and like have been doing this stuff full time since then. So like 5 years, which is a mad amount of time really. But yeah, I think everyone probably goes through a period of being a bit lost, but not many people have such an obsessive identity with a sport or a pursuit when they're younger, I suppose. And for me, I was always used to having something that I was obsessed with. And then that thing ended up becoming building brands in the end, and still is now. A lot of similarities, but a lot of differences, obviously.
Take me through your mental health around that time, because I know mental health is something you speak a lot about today. But I'm curious, while you were in university, right after your rowing, while you're beginning that stages of building brands, what was your mental health like? How would you describe it looking back?
Yeah, I had a really bad period when I was in uni, probably like 19. I think because, there's kind of a consistent pattern with that, which we can maybe come on to in a more recent sense. But like, yeah, when I was about 19, I remember just hating being at uni and just feeling super lost and didn't have any money to do anything else, and didn't really know what I was working on, what my I guess purpose was at the time. So yeah, looking back, I definitely think upon reflection that was kind of the cause of a lot of, I don't know, probably depression, anxiety, whatever, which is probably what a lot of people experience, I think, particularly as like students at uni, because they don't necessarily have a jam-packed day full of something to work on, or even if they do, they might not necessarily like what they're working on, and they don't feel fulfilled by the process, X, Y, Z. And then I remember when I ultimately kind of found myself in e-commerce in kind of early, to, well, 5 years ago, pretty much. I left in like March 2017, so just about 5 years ago. And then I just dived balls deep into e-com. And that's when I was doing it like full time, and it was working for me kind of from that point. And yeah, I guess my mind was in a much better place over the next few years. Until we come to last year where shit went very wrong. And that was probably ultimately why I got into a bad space as a result of that, because I lost, like, that business went tits up and I was like, fuck, what do I do next? I mean, obviously I build another business, which is what I'm doing now. But yeah, I think I've definitely noticed a pattern with how busy and focused I am on a certain like kind of mission. And if I'm not busy and focused on a mission, that probably is when I slip into not feeling so good, not so motivated and excited by life, I suppose. That's probably the same for a lot of people and certainly for a lot of entrepreneurs. But I think on reflection, that's definitely like the biggest correlation I see between like my life and my mind.
Hmm.
So yeah, it's interesting to look back at.
Absolutely. So it's fascinating for me because I did e-commerce and dropshipping for a year and a half, maybe around there. And what I found was that I was very short-term focused. And yeah. It was exciting because I was making money, and then it was not so exciting because I was like, what am I even doing this for? Like, what's the long-term purpose? For you, it seemed like you were in that game since 2017. You were making money from different stores. Eventually, you had a couple of different stores that really took off and did really well. Was it ever a feeling to you of like, wow, I'm playing a short-term game right now? And did that thought upset you?
My introduction and approach to e-com is actually probably, I mean, I've discussed it on my own pod a little bit, but certainly like episode 20 something when I went on the 44 podcast and spoke about kind of prior to Neon Beach, which is where my pod started. Because I like started building brands with a long-term intention in like 2015, 16, just into the start of 17. I had a clothing brand called Dusk, which was actually a pretty decent business. Like, we did like six figures in revenue. Like, I was still in uni at this point, by the way, but like, we had an office. It was me and Ollie Hudson, who now runs Soar With Us agency, who's been on my pod. And that was, that was a pretty impressive operation looking back. It was just too soon and we weren't the right co-founders and I wasn't that into fashion. And then, long story short, we kind of stopped doing that and I was like, fuck this, I'm going traveling. And that's when I got into the like pure dropshipping, AliExpress, Facebook ads world. So I'd actually been brand building on a much smaller scale than now for like 2 years prior to that. And for about 6 months to like a decent level. And then I was like, I guess I was very self-aware and I was like, I want to be in this game long-term, but right now what I need is to meet new people, build experience and get cash. And then I made a lot of money in the dropshipping space when Facebook ads were a lot cheaper for about 2 years, primarily between kind of summer 17 to summer 19 at that. And then at which point I started building my jewelry business, Midnight City, which I spoke a lot about on the podcast. But that was because I kind of went cold turkey on dropshipping because I was like, fuck this. I've made a decent amount of money. I know I want to get back to what I was originally doing, ironically, anyway, which was kind of building brands. But for me as well, on top of that, it always came and still does. It always came from a place of I was a creative first rather than, I don't know, some guy on the internet just trying to make money. And I see so much of it now, like TikTok dropshipping is now like the new kind of buzzword. And people often say to me or on Twitter, what you kind of see the conversation, like, why wouldn't you do it? Like, why bother building a brand X, Y, Z? But for me, like, even when I was drop shipping back in like 2018, at kind of at like its peak, I always knew it was very much intentionally short term. I was like, let's just see how much money I can make, build this experience. And I was networking and traveling a lot of the time. So it kind of suited that lifestyle a lot more. And I don't regret doing any of that because even though it's short term, it taught me a huge amount. I made some really good money doing it. And I met a lot of people, which is probably the most important asset from all that along the way, like living in Bali, Australia, America, all this. What was I trying to say? I guess the point is I always came at e-commerce broadly, e-commerce and entrepreneurship from I want to build cool creative shit. Because I was a designer, like first. I used to design logos. That was my first foot in the door of any form of entrepreneurship. And then it was like, all right, cool. Well, how can I monetize my interest in designing shit? Oh, I probably need to make a product. And then originally it was a clothing brand called Gentry Club back in 2015, which was like utter shite. I worked all summer in a burger bar, in John Lewis actually, on like £7 an hour and put all my money into stock and couldn't sell any. And I think it's literally still in my parents' attic now. That was my first venture, but it started with wanting to design logos. And then I guess it brings me to like now where I've built a few decent brands, granted with ups and downs. That is why I'm kind of, I guess a lot of people kind of lick my ass a bit on Twitter and say, oh, like your new brand's amazing. It's the best new brand I've ever seen, blah, blah, blah. And I don't disagree, like aesthetically, I think it's very cool, but that's because I've been doing it for like 7 years from a design perspective as well, not just from a dropshipping e-com perspective. So yeah, I guess that answers the question very long-windedly, but that was always the approach I took. I wanted to do cool shit and e-commerce eventually became the vehicle to do that.
Why do you think that design has played such a critical role? Like, why do you think you were so attracted to design?
Yeah, I think it wasn't even necessarily design to begin with. I suppose like back when I was like 10 years old, I'd probably say I was quite creative in the sense that like, I don't know, I loved like movies. I liked music as well, obsessed with music, played a lot of music, like used to write a lot of music. So I suppose like I was always kind of excited by films and music. And then I guess I started to kind of, I used to draw like sharks and shit. I mean, a lot of kids draw stuff, but that was probably the very first like foot into design of some sort. And then I became interested in logos because I did graphic design when I was like 16 at school. But yeah, I suppose design ultimately, and like graphic design more specifically, was just like a logical way of me kind of having a creative outlet, because most people have a computer in their teenage years, as I did. I didn't have a MacBook back then. I probably had some shit HP thing. I also used to make like horror films on my iPhone and stuff, I suppose. So yeah, logos was like the only thing that seemed to have a logical next step potentially. And yeah, I guess that kind of got me interested in products and then building websites and all that sort of shit. So yeah.
Makes sense.
Just put the kettle on, by the way. I hope you can't hear that too loud.
I don't think I can hear it.
All good.
But speaking of the design and space goods in general.
Yeah.
It's really fascinating. And just when I look at it, you know, you're instantly drawn into it. Why am I instantly drawn to it?
Probably firstly, because it's pink. I've always had a bit of an obsession. I mean, talking more specifically about this brand for a minute then, design-wise, I've always had a unusually intense obsession with like the whole just 80s aesthetic, kind of pink stuff, like synth music. Not even just pink, like pink, purple, kind of hue lights, like dim lighting, atmospheric vibes, I suppose. And I played around with the idea of launching, I mean, because most people know about Neon Beach from my podcast, which obviously was a disaster in the end. But as a brand, that was obviously kind of that whole aesthetic, like pink, purple. I mean, even looking back at that, though, to be fair, even though that was only 2 years ago, like design-wise and like my website design work on that was crap, I think, compared to my new brand. So it's funny how much my taste has developed, I guess, over time. But that was originally going to be a canvas brand, which I started working on in like 2016, which was like one of my first ventures called Neon Beach. And it was going to be a 1980s motivational canvas brand. And now you may see in the back of my podcast, there's like this Always Think Big canvas, which is one of the original designs, which is like synthwave, retrowave, whatever. And there's a bunch of other posters and stuff I've got in the flat. So yeah, I've always been obsessed with that sort of aesthetic. Then when I started like 5 and a bit months ago now, I started like fully decided, right, I'm working on this next brand now. This is broadly what it's going to be. I guess it was like, oh fuck, I love this aesthetic. This product kind of fits it. And there's no one in this space really, particularly in like the supplement space broadly, but certainly not in like the nootropic mushroom space, doing anything that's this bold and polarizing. So I guess it was like, and it also came from a place of like, I went through so much misery with the failure of my previous brand, which everyone knows about, but probably
no one knows about, by the way. Let's assume that no one knows about it for people listening.
Well, yeah, because obviously, so yeah, I found myself in 2020 kind of, bang on 2 years ago, running two brands at like £1 million a month level combined, which I'd built from scratch. Obviously, one was my jewelry business, one was Neon Beach, which grew ludicrously quick because it was kind of perfect product, right time. And I guess I basically pioneered, well, maybe that's blowing smoke at my own ass, but sort of pioneered that online Instagram neon space. And that brand, which I didn't have to launch, I was already running a successful jewelry business, making like multi 7-figure revenue, multi 6-figure profit run rate. And I started Neon Beach as literally kind of like a joke on the side, because I wanted to do something with like the whole neon aesthetic, whether that was literally neon signs or anything else, didn't really matter. And then it started to take off and I was like, oh fuck, I'm really creatively interested in that. And then, you know, long story short, I focused on that brand and I scaled it too quick. Then we had a massive supply chain problem. Go watch episode 1 of my podcast for context on that. But the reason that became so hellish again, upon reflection, is because I basically spent six to nine months in kind of total going from ultimately building something for fun that I didn't have to do. Like, I already had a successful jewelry business with the intent to just do something creative. And I loved the process of building the next brand, particularly because it was like pink and it was neon. But then it went from being a creative business, like, you know, me doing what I was best at, which is branding and marketing, to months and months of just supply chain problem, firefighting, cash flow problem solving, and ultimately not solving, but then eventually solving because I got basically bought out by, you know, X people who I speak about in the pod. So this time around, I was like, fuck it. Like, if I'm going to pursue anything, I want to at least enjoy as much as possible the vast majority of the process. And if that means just, again, going like balls deep into like an aesthetic that I love, even if a lot of people think it's like cringe or weird or doesn't fit, you know, this brand, then I don't really care, because I believe that it firstly makes sense for the brand. I think it's super unique, but also it's just like a reflection of my mind. And I'm just like, I've kind of got to the point where I kind of have like nothing to lose, like creatively anymore, which might sound kind of dramatic, but it's like, I've seen how quick stuff can go very well building a brand and kind of live that high life that a lot of people might see on Instagram, whatever. But then I've also experienced the exact polar opposite, which I think a lot of people haven't at this sort of stage of life. And, you know, other than outside health problems or whatever, which I'm fortunate to not be dealing with currently, I don't think it could have got much worse, like emotionally for me as a founder. Because yeah, it was really just hell, to be honest, because my creative vision ended up becoming the biggest burden in my entire life, and tens of thousands of people wanted to kill me online and stuff. So yeah, I guess now I've experienced how wrong stuff can go. And granted, I think that was pretty extreme circumstance and I wouldn't wish it on anyone. I'm just like, well, if I'm building this next brand, let's just have fun with it at the very least. And obviously try and like make $1 billion or whatever, but at the very least have fun with it. And I think the fun element of entrepreneurship for me always started with the design work and the aesthetic vision. And I guess the more kind of front end, probably less important stuff in many ways, but yeah, you know, like I would listen to like synthwave music late at night, kind of sit there with a neon sign and like come up with ideas for like the next thing. And that's always been the most enjoyable part of the process to me. And then obviously like seeing it come to life takes a lot of time, money, experience and grind as well over like months, which I've done with this brand. But yeah, I really just thought like, fuck it. If I'm going to put my soul on the line and be in the trenches for the next few years, which by the way, I definitely am, because it's still bloody hard work building anything, as any entrepreneur knows. Then I may as well do it in a space that I'm super passionate about, but also with a brand that I'm excited by and I'm like proud to put my name next to, certainly from like a creative standpoint. And I guess it's probably a very long answer to your question, but I kind of had a shift in the past few months from thinking I had to move away from like the less important stuff, i.e. design and stuff, which by the way isn't less important, but I probably got kind of corrupted by the last year of thinking, oh, I need to be like big businessman, like only focus on operations, just hire people to do everything. But then it's like, well, fuck it. I originally got into any of this space like 10 years ago or whatever, because I liked just designing cool shit. And now it's like, I would just like to be recognized as a designer and creative as much as an entrepreneur. And I've stopped calling myself an e-com entrepreneur as well, because I think there's too many like cliques and bubbles and cliches in like the whole podcast, Twitter sphere, whatever, like e-com entrepreneurs. It's like, no, now I just call myself a designer and entrepreneur. And maybe that's just even more obnoxious. But yeah, I guess I want to get back to that place where I am a creative as much as a business person. Whatever that means to people, but in my head, it makes sense.
I think that it's funny how your journey seems to me from the outside, like you had this idea of yourself as a designer when you were a kid and you've slowly lost that and then come back to that 10 years later almost. And it's cool. And it shows that it's possible to reclaim who you were as a child and get back to that place. And really that's where our joy comes from my perspective at least.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Like, I think ultimately, like, the process from like childhood to adulthood for like sadly a lot of society and probably most people is like the death of their kind of fun and creativity and like dreamer personality type, whatever. Because like I've always been, I don't know, like people would call me cringe and shit. Like looking back at my Instagram, I used to write like dramatic kind of entrepreneurial motivational captions and shit back in like 2016, 17. I was always quite good at elaborating my ambitions, I suppose, is one way to put it. Articulating my ambitions maybe. And now I do it through the podcast and shit. But yeah, I don't know. I suppose like the past 2 years taught me the most in terms of like life and who I want to be and like, because like I said, I went from the one extreme of, oh fuck, I'm driving a Ferrari, everything seems to be going perfectly. Like I've got at the time the perfect girlfriend, I thought, you know, the perfect car, I live in the perfect place. I have two successful, cool econ brands. And then 6 months later, I was like borderline suicidal thinking, what the fuck has happened here? But then I suppose like the rebirth, whatever, like getting dramatic again. But like, I suppose I kind of just thought, well, fuck it. If I'm going to, I spoke a bit about this with Iman on that episode. It was kind of like, in my head, it was like, fuck, well, I'm either going to just check out of life and become a failure, which was never going to happen. Although it was kind of felt like the easier path at the time. Or I'm going to go all in on building the next thing, putting what I know to the test. And yeah, like focus on, like I just said, being, trying to enjoy the process more again by being more creative. Because I think a lot of people lose like they stop doing the things that got them excited and into a certain space in the first place, because like kind of life gets in the way or like business gets in the way. So I don't know, maybe they used to be a really good salesperson, but now all they do is like hire people and deal with like legal bullshit or whatever. I don't know, it's different for everyone. But for me, like I said, yeah, I used to be like just obsessed with being creative. And I suppose now, like one way of looking at it is I'm trying to do like the 12-year-old version of myself justice, because now I have experience and resource and like context to actually build something cool that my 12-year-old self probably would have loved the idea of at the time. But obviously when you're 12 years old, you can't build a business. I mean, maybe you can, but probably not to any reputable level. So yeah, I've kind of realized what I want to focus on a bit more. But at the same time, I do feel like, and everyone probably says this with like every business they ever start, but like for me, I feel like this has to be like the one. And by the one, I mean the brand that firstly I stick with, because I've done so many different projects over the years and never stuck with anything for more than like literally 2 years tops, which is probably partly like ADHD, but partly my brain not fully forming until like age 25 or whatever people say, which I reckon probably is true.
Yeah.
But also like the one that I stick with and the one that I can hopefully make a shitload of money with, but also have like, you know, like be the thing that I built and I'm recognized for building. Because yeah, granted, I want to make a load of money. Obviously, I want to do something creative and cool. But I'm also aware that I need to build a viable business and have a good product and all that kind of less glamorous stuff. Like I'm not dismissing that because I'm getting so excited about the aesthetic. Like all that stuff is there. And I'm probably more aware of the importance of that than ever. And most people, because it went very wrong when I didn't get that right. So yeah, it feels like, I don't know, it would be a great future biography when I get this brand right, and I don't know, we sell it for like 500 million quid in like 5 years or whatever, because everything would make sense looking back then. Do you know what I mean? And I don't know, it just seems to be something feels like more aligned with this next venture of mine in many ways than anything I've done before. It almost feels like all those previous businesses were like leading me to the opportunity to build something cool in this space. And granted, I've not even fucking launched it yet, so I don't want to blow too much smoke up my own ass, but I do think it's an exciting market. And I think if anyone can crack it, then I can crack it, to be honest. So yeah, I'm like quietly confident in my ability to execute on it, but I guess it kind of feels like, Jesus Christ, it's been a long time coming to get something right. Because yeah, I've obviously got things right, but then got things wrong. And Yeah, I don't know. I always joke to my friends, like, if anyone should be a lot richer than they currently are, it's probably me, because I've been in the game so long. And I see, like, I use the word cunt lightly, but I seem to say it all the time. I see, like, cunts on Twitter that are, like, 19, and they're, like, they've made, like, 5 million profit from TikTok or some bullshit. And I'm like, for fuck's sake. Like, I've been grinding my ass for 7 years, and, yeah, felt like I got so close to, like, making it with the brands I had, like, 2 years ago, whatever making it means. But obviously then had a taste of shit going very, very wrong. So now I'm just probably more motivated than anyone ever to get this next one right. But yeah, not just motivated, also prepared, I think. So, yeah.
You know what's really interesting about you is you seem so invested in what other people think and why, and like their opinions of you. If you look on Twitter, it's like you are like pointing out trolls and trying to like justify trolls and attack them on your own platform. And when you're speaking now, it's like, I'm going to prove to people. Why do you think you're so invested in what everyone else thinks?
I mean, yeah, maybe I am. I think I've definitely always had a chip on my shoulder ever since I was probably like, I don't know, 18. And then when I left uni, I suppose it's probably twofold. It probably started in terms of like, I mean, everyone probably goes through this entrepreneurially, but like when I was at uni, then I left uni and people didn't know what I was doing. And like, I guess started to see glimpses of like something must be working, because, you know, I was driving like fancy cars and shit on Instagram. So that was kind of like, oh, I've won over that side of people. And then I suppose when everything went so wrong last year, I probably felt like I had, I don't know, maybe in my head, I felt like a lot of people were so happy to see that happen. As in people that I would never want to associate with, but like, I don't know, maybe people I went to school with that have never backed themselves or whatever. And then I really just felt like, fuck it, I have something to prove now, kind of to myself as well. But on the caring what other people think, I mean, I definitely give less of a shit now, because I got absolutely annihilated online for like 6 months through the whole Neon Beach scandal, if you want to call it that. And that like completely crushed my like self-esteem. And like, I deleted Instagram for like 6 months and I was basically scared to go back online. And then pretty much when I did is when I put out the first podcast, and then I got like an insanely positive response. And I was like, oh wow, okay, shit. People appreciate transparency and authenticity, which is kind of what I'd hoped. And then it was kind of proven true. So I think I care that much what people think anymore, because I definitely speak my mind a lot, and there's probably nothing I haven't spoken about on that podcast if someone was to go and watch all like, I don't know, 60 hours of it now. But I guess, yeah, I feel like I need to, prove myself right, because I'm probably the first to say it as well. Like, I always undermine my own accomplishments because I feel like I genuinely haven't achieved anything, but because I've not done that like 100 million pound brand level yet. But I'm also aware that I've done more than 99% of people my age. Certainly like in terms of being honest about it as well, because there's a lot of smoke and mirrors online, as we all know, particularly in this space. So I don't know. Does that answer the question? I'm kind of just musing over this in my head out loud. But yeah, I think I care about what other people think, because I want to be, probably because actually I think the answer to that is because people's things that were said about me online through that whole Neon Beach scandal and stuff, which basically, you know, the headline figure was I'm a scam artist, was just so wildly incorrect. And it just completely crushed my soul for like months, because it couldn't have been further from the truth for a start. And, you know, I was, the worst part of that was thinking that everyone that maybe didn't know me too well, or like kind of acquaintances, suddenly thought less of me or whatever, when my intentions have always been very good. And I think, to be honest, better than most people in the online space. Like, there's a lot of ways I probably could have exploited people for money, selling, I don't know, X, Y, and Z bullshit. Like, even in like the whole Neon Beach situation, like, I didn't have to basically give up my entire business to pay customers back. I could have shut my laptop and disappeared to Bali or something. I mean, I might not be alive right now if I'd done that, but like, that's also like a part that I think people missed at the time. So yeah, maybe I'm just very conscious of people not getting the wrong idea of me, because along with like the podcast as well, and this has happened, by the way, like, because I'm so off, well, I think I'm so authentic on it, like there's literally nothing I don't say really, whether that be about like my past relationships, money, girls, like I think people could probably like know everything about me just by watching it. But I also think the dark side to that is when you take certain clips or sentences out of context, it can look bad. So for example, this actually came up recently, and I probably shouldn't say it, but I'm going to speak about it. Like the Iman episode got me in trouble with a few people. I say trouble. It was my ex-girlfriend before we broke up, or when we just broken up, and a bunch of her friends. And there was some rumor going around. Well, not some rumor, just like everyone was calling me a misogynist, apparently, because apparently I can't break up with a girl and not be a misogynist. I don't know. And I just think that was, yeah, stuff like that I'm conscious of, because I basically think anyone that has an opinion or is honest about anything is probably putting themselves up for ridicule in this day and age. Like the only way to be liked by everyone is to say nothing ever, basically. And I don't think I'm not particularly right wing or anything. I think I'm just very honest and reasonable, and probably view the world like most male entrepreneurs. Like granted, I don't know, like there's probably comments that could be taken, particularly in that podcast, apparently, out of context and clipped and make me look like a right idiot. But you know, if you take anything out of context, then it probably looks horrendous. But I think it would be hard pressed to find someone that could watch that entire episode or another entire episode and still think that I'm a cunt, basically. And yeah, so I suppose I'm conscious of wanting to be my true self, and I think I am online and stuff. But I just know that in this day and age, people take stuff out of context, and it's frustrating when people that you care about or used to care about, like, get the wrong idea about something.
Yeah, I agree with you, but
I've probably gone on a tangent there, but
I haven't dealt with the level of hate online that you've dealt with for so long, so I want to preface that statement by saying that.
Yeah, I mean, but all that's long gone, just to clarify. This was like back in, you know, a few months at the start of 2021 primarily.
Right, but it's like if somebody calls you just something that completely isn't true at all, or if somebody calls me something that's not true at all, I don't get upset because I know what they're talking about has no basis in reality. So how could I let it affect me? But I think the things we do hold on to and are attached to are the things that we know in our heart hold some level of truth to it. Is that also true for you?
Yeah, but I've heard people say that. When I said like a few examples, the example I'm really talking about is, yeah, like certain people, friends of friends that were like friends of my ex-girlfriend, feeding back to me that apparently word on the grapevine is that I'm a massive misogynist and idiot, apparently, because of that one episode with Iman Gazi.
Yeah.
And by the way, I think if anyone actually knew anything about Iman, they wouldn't think he was a misogynist or a cunt anyway. I think you're really clutching at straws to find, you know, something terribly wrong about a self-made young person in it that's genuinely doing like net good things in the world. So yeah, I think like most people that make these comments in any context, but certainly like in a public domain, whether that's like a comment on YouTube or whatever, usually haven't done anything of any positive significance in their life anyway. So that's kind of the first thing. But yeah, I suppose what you're saying about, yeah, if it affects you, there's probably an element of truth to it. Yeah, in a way. But I think a lot of stuff, like for example, when people call me a scam artist, and by the way, I say people, like trolls that didn't know me, just didn't have any context, but it still affected me because I thought, well, other people that don't have context, i.e. my mum, might think that's true, because they don't know the inner workings of my business. They certainly didn't know anywhere near as much at the time. You know, people from school or whatever, like people that you're ultimately not that close with, but you still probably care a little bit if they think something untrue. But yeah, I just think, broadly speaking, social media and like society as a whole has got to such an extreme point where, like I was saying before, you almost can't say anything anymore without someone having a massive problem with it. But yeah, as a general rule of thumb, people that kind of talk shit online have usually never done anything themselves and certainly not done more than the person they're talking shit about. And there's kind of no exception to that rule. So, yeah, I mean, I don't, like, for example, you mentioned I tweeted earlier about a troll. That was literally someone commented on YouTube today. I thought it was quite funny. Like, that doesn't bother me. It just, like, I guess it frustrates me that why can't I have a conversation with this person to figure out what's wrong with their life to try and help them almost? It's almost like it comes from a position of frustrated empathy rather than like, fuck you. I mean, like, certainly comments like that where it's literally like so like not true that it's funny.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I don't know. I think Gary Vee talks a lot about that, like kind of feeling sorry for haters and shit.
Yeah, feeling sorry for haters and actually wanting to give them love and actually giving love to them in that moment. I think it's one thing to put them on blast on Twitter. Look at this dumb thing that someone else said and then get your supporters to feel happy for you. But it's another thing to actually not tweet that out and just respond to that person and say like, hey, like I'm sending you love. I hope you're good. Because that's what you're feeling in your heart. I think that's the next level.
Yeah.
I think that's the next level.
Monk mode. Monk mode answer. Yeah. I guess I just find it quite funny.
Yeah. No, so I want to talk to you about kind of switching gears here about cynical optimism. What is cynical optimism all about?
Yeah. Geez, you've done research here. I don't know when I said that, but I think I mentioned that a few months ago or I tweeted about it. I don't know if that's off the back of a personality test or something, but like, yeah, I've always been, like I've always net been very optimistic, even when shit was going very wrong. Like I've always like wildly believed in myself, like in every endeavor, ultimately. But at the same time, like I know I'm a fucking Yorkshire Northern boy at heart and I can be like, flippantly or literally like just a moody cunt sometimes. But I suppose what did I mean specifically by cynical optimist? I mean, I think I meant because I've seen like the ups and downs of entrepreneurship probably more than most people at my age
and not faster.
More than super probably, and certainly like like over the past 2 years I've got to probably quite a useful place in terms of experience and like the way I view things now where my like I guess my bullshit radar is very sharp, I think. And what do I mean by that? But so like I'm very optimistic about what I can achieve, and because ultimately I have the skills and I put the work in. But for example, you know, when I see some 17-year-old doing a Twitter thread about life advice because they've done 100 grand with TikTok dropshipping, I'm just like a complete cynic, because I know that firstly they're probably lying about the numbers, they've probably never paid a tax bill in their life. Do you know what I mean? I guess what I'm trying to say is I have context, a certain level of context in the game now, having been doing it to like a good level for many years, that I kind of see past 90% of like smoke and mirror bullshit. But at the same time, yeah, I guess I have that side of me, which is like kind of, this is all bullshit. Like most stuff online is trash. But then I also like fundamentally believe in certain things and certain people because I actually know that they're legit. I don't know. I don't know if that even makes sense. But I just felt like cynical optimist was like a great description of my like overall character and the way I view certain things. Because, yeah, I think there's a lot of people which just talk a lot about things that they might do or are planning on doing, but we're still waiting to see anything they've actually done, I don't know. I think just having some experience in the game myself and experience with good and bad people along the way and bullshitters and doers along the way has probably just given me a barometer on what's legit and what's not, is probably what I'm trying to say. It's probably a concept that I've made sound so complicated, but yeah, I guess I just meant like, I think I have a fairly rounded and solid understanding of what's legit and what's not, and like where the right balance between optimism and realism is, basically.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. And it's obviously something that you need to, that's been built over 10 years in the game. Kind of switching gears, I want to ask about crying in your bedroom this January. What happened?
When did I say that? You definitely done research here.
I think it was the 44 podcast, which was really well done. And oh, really yeah, appreciate. Probably.
I mean, yeah. 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 44 was pretty good. I mean, yeah. So I mentioned near the start of the podcast, yeah, like I said, back when I was in uni, I went through a really bad period, et cetera, et cetera. And then I felt like I was on top of the world for like 4 years, what felt like making more and more money, doing cooler, cooler shit. And then obviously, yeah, like start of 2021 was very rough. I felt like I kind of hit rock bottom in like March 21, because that's when I basically got bailed out by these private equity guys and lost control of my business. I mean, again, that's all in episode one. So that was like rock bottom version one, I suppose. And then I spent 6 months working with them. And then I decided to back out of that because I wanted to build the next brand. And this was back in like September 2021 when I decided I was going to do my own thing again. And I guess like officially went into doing that in like November 21. But that was also a month where I broke up with my girlfriend, which completely fucked my head, to be honest. And again, I've spoken about that way too much in my podcast to the point where everyone tells me off for doing so. But yeah.
And calls you a misogynist, apparently.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I've definitely come out the other side of that to a degree. But yeah, I kind of found myself in a weird spot like November, December, January this year, I suppose, primarily because I was like, fuck, well, I've decided to go all out doing my own thing again. I hadn't really decided what I was doing yet. Like, it wasn't real enough to be excited about it because I was literally like just in my flat. My girlfriend had moved out. And I was like, oh, fuck. And I wasn't in the best shape either, because looking back, I've lost like 9 kilos since then. And I'm like in like savage shape right now compared to what I was. That's another story altogether. Yeah, and I felt like I just hit like rock bottom version two, to be honest. As in like all the dust had settled on like the Neon Beach shit. But then it was a bit like, all right, so for the first time in about a year, I'm not like cripplingly stressed and I can sleep a little bit. But now I don't, but now I'm back to feeling like lost and don't have a fucking like mission. I know I'm going to build the next business. I know I want to do something massive because I have to. It's like the only option in my head. But my entire like identity from the previous year or whatever had gone, like living with my girlfriend who at one point I probably thought was like the one. And then that turned out not to be the case for a billion reasons. And then, yeah, like, I've always been a very up and down character. Like, I was actually diagnosed with being type 2 bipolar back in like November, which I actually haven't spoke about on the podcast at all or in any domain. I'm not really one for labels on mental health and shit, but that probably explained a lot to me. Not that it really matters, but yeah, it just kind of proved that, yeah, like it explained why I'd always felt very up and down, definitely influenced by entrepreneurship. Like I think a lot of people, but probably more than is normal. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I suppose there've been times in the past few months where I just felt like fucking killing myself, to be honest. And I know that's a bit dramatic for a podcast but that's just the truth. Like less so in recent months when I feel like I've kind of moved like fully into this next chapter of building this brand. But like, yeah, I think I've always been prone to that sort of thought because I've always just battled with my mind a lot, and when it gets really bad, that's how I feel. But I suppose, yeah, having that loss of direction again, and I was back to like living by myself for a little bit, then my flatmate moved in, but like there was an interim period where I broke up with my girlfriend, didn't know what the fuck I was doing for the next business, didn't have any income for the first time in like 5 years. I mean, like I had like money and stuff, I wasn't completely fucked, but you know, it just felt a bit like, oh shit, maybe I'm actually a fucking loser. And then, yeah, I think I actually filmed a video on the 29th of October, 2021. Well, I did film a video and I'm planning to post that video on 29th of October, 2022, when hopefully
I love that.
There's like fucking 7 figures in sales from the new brand and all that shit. But it was me speaking to camera for like 5 minutes, just being like, I feel like I've lost everything. I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. I was saying like 5 months ago, and that was just before, like maybe like within the next week, I decided and committed fully to like this next idea. And now I'm like a few days away from launching it. So I suppose, what am I trying to say? I mean, yeah, I went through a lot of low points, I think, in the past year. And that was like rock bottom version two, that kind of period before I committed and figured out what I was going to do. Because I think maybe I feel like I've been like excited for the first time in like over a year about what I'm working on in like the past month, particularly as this brand has started to like come together and I've been doing all this 1980 shit and I've been tweeting my ass off about loads of stuff. But I think a lot of people would be very, very surprised to what extent that was not the case for many, many months, like to the point where, yeah, like I was pretty like consistently borderline suicidal for like a long time.
What do you do in those moments?
Think about how great the next thing I'm going to build has to be. And this comes back to the point when I was saying I don't like the idea of people getting the wrong idea, because one thing I've been accused of, and I think a lot of entrepreneurs are probably accused of this by, like, I don't know, for me it was family members, friends that aren't entrepreneurs. Like, I've always been accused of being money obsessed, chasing money, all this bullshit, because chasing money is obviously, like, you know, in Western culture, like, it's a bad thing, because obviously most people think money is like evil and shit, which is interesting. And I've always been like, by my own parents, like I say accused, but like they've said, oh, you need to stop chasing money, just like be happy. But they don't get it. Like, firstly, it's not about money. If it was about money, why wouldn't I just go and get a job as a banker, right? That is literally just about money, because a lot of people that do it probably don't want to be there, but they love the big paycheck. If I was chasing money, why the fuck would I start a pink neon light business from my bedroom when I didn't need to? Which, by the way, I ended up losing like well over £1 million, but that's another story. Like, if I was chasing money, why would I do those things? Surely I would do something that was purely centered around money, not centered around creative interests, passion, like wanting to have an impact on an industry, X, Y, Z. So I think a lot of people that don't understand the true entrepreneurial desire to build something just kind of lash out their misunderstanding by saying, you're chasing money, stop chasing money. How did I get onto that? I've lost my train of thought. It's something I wanted to speak about, but how did I get onto that? I suppose, yeah, so to bring it back, and the reason I think that's so like offensive and that really like pisses me off and always has from my parents, my own brother, to be fair, and just like people that aren't entrepreneurs and don't get the genuine desire to do something cool that an entrepreneur has. Like, it's, for me at least, it's never been about money. Like, obviously I want to get rich and do cool shit, but it was always started from a place of, I want to do something fucking cool and build something great. That was it. Like, and, you know, like I said, it started fucking designing logos, whatever. Now it's building a business. And then obviously you grow up and understand that you need to have a lot of money to do something cool, because it takes capital and input. And also, by making a lot of money, it means you've built something cooler, because you've probably got more customers and you've had a bigger impact, X, Y, Z. So there's a billion ways that money is not evil, but that's a whole other topic. But yeah, so I guess when I was in those dark places, I thought, well, you know, I have to build something great, because that's always been like, I keep saying great, but like at the very least, just something very cool that I enjoy and is my passion and is successful, because that's what the 12-year-old version of me wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And like that same, it's the same core desire. It's not about money. Money just comes into the equation because, like I just said, you need it to build a business. And if you have customers, you'll have revenue, which is money, right? So it's not evil, mm-hmm. and it's not like a bad pursuit. And I think a lot of entrepreneurs, particularly like real entrepreneurs, not just people that want to be dropshipping for 6 months and get out and go and put money in crypto and sit on a beach for 10 years, which is another category of discussion altogether. But like, yeah, real entrepreneurs, which I definitely think, I know I am one, because it's all I could ever do. I think a lot of them are misunderstood. And by the way, I had this exact issue with my ex-girlfriend, and it's probably like the thing that I most consciously don't want people to think and get the wrong idea about, is that I'm chasing money, or, you know, this money obsessed capitalist that just wants to make money at the expense of like health, wealth, love and happiness and all this bullshit. But for me, like, yeah, building something creative and cool is the only thing I've ever wanted to do, and is a much, in my opinion, is a much more pure pursuit and desire than the vast majority of society, who actually probably do just work jobs for money, and then by default are they not more chasing money than me? Do you know what I mean? So yeah. I don't know, I've kind of gone off on a tangent there because I'm passionate about it, but I think it. A lot of people can relate to that, because I think a lot of us entrepreneurs are misunderstood.
Absolutely. And I want to touch on the health, wealth, love and happiness, but I first need to take a pee break. So give me a minute and we'll come right back.
All right, sweet. Recording or something?
No, not at all. So we're back after a quick pee break. What would you recommend before we get into your four pillars? What would you recommend to somebody who's dealing with suicidal thoughts? Obviously, call a helpline of some sort, but like, what would you recommend to somebody who's just very depressed and doesn't know what to do?
Oh, geez. I mean, I've never been asked that, but I mean, for me, like the best antidote to, you know, poor mental health and feeling in a bad place, which I've been very open about, is ultimately finding something you're passionate about and going all in on it. Because like, it was the same when I was 19 and I felt lost at uni. And, you know, that I think upon reflection is definitely was like the cause of my poor mental health, whatever you want to call it, depression, anxiety, all that shit, which a lot of people go through. But I actually think the core source of that for most people really is a lack of something they're working on. It doesn't have to be building a business. It can be becoming obsessed with the gym. I mean, I guess like a few baseline things. Don't drink alcohol. Or certainly drink a shitload less of it, because a lot of people drink a lot of alcohol and it's the single worst thing if you're on a bad mental place. Like, it can make things 10 times worse. So don't drink alcohol, don't do drugs, don't smoke, any of that crap. That's the first thing. Sleep a lot, try and eat healthily, certainly go to the gym. But I think beyond that, yeah, just figuring out something you want to work on, whether that's literally, for me, like it was originally, designing logos and becoming good at something through repeatedly working on it and starting to build momentum. I think like for me, actually, the most exciting thing and like the cause of when I feel best is progress. And progress is like the most fulfilling thing, I think, for anyone. And I'm just speaking about the way I think. It might not be the case for everyone, but I think that is what has helped me the most, just going all in on building something or doing something and getting better at it and just finding progress. Because, yeah, I don't know, like, even if that literally is, because like, everyone has something that they're like remotely interested in. I think the problem is now, in a lot of cases, like, it seems to be like we're breeding like a society of people that have no interests or passions beyond like scrolling social media. Like, I think it's actually a bit of an epidemic. It's almost become cool to be fucking boring and do nothing with your life. I mean, like, I don't know if that's controversial really to say,
that?
But like,
you really, I don't think
like,
that at all.
I feel like, well, I think maybe there's been a bit of a, but I mean, like, I mean, I'm certainly
in
not
what way?
To get, I mean, I'm just thinking back to when I was like at uni and stuff. It would like, it would almost be like cringe to be working on something. It's like, why aren't you just coming out and drinking beer? I mean, obviously that's uni in the UK and that's a bit of a stereotype example, but I don't know, but like almost to the point, I guess like my bubble of people I hang around with and speak to, 95% of them are certainly like entrepreneurs and stuff. And it can feel like maybe, I don't know, like even when I speak to maybe not my friends back home, but like I hear about what people are up to and like, I don't know, maybe it's not that people don't want to do anything, but it's like, it seems like people, the culture these days is just like talk about stuff you're going to do rather than actually do it. I don't know. Is that fair to say? Maybe I'm just making this up on the spot, but it feels to me like that's the general like vibe I see on social media, like in terms of like comments people write and stuff. Like,
interesting.
I don't know. It always feels like people get the piss taken out of them for starting something rather than just, oh, great. If they can start something, then why can't I? Because for example, even like a podcast, right? I was thinking about this the other day. I think particularly like, you know, content outlets or whatever, people will like jump to like, why would you start another podcast? There's already a million podcasts. But no one says that about like having a kick about with their mates playing football. Just like, just because you're not Ronaldo doesn't mean you can't play football. I don't know. Like I used to make music videos when I was like 16 on YouTube and they got, you know, the piss royally taken out of them. I mean, I guess that's a bit different when you're like 16 because everyone just takes the piss out of anything you ever do. But yeah, I don't know. I just feel like we're living in a culture of people just jumping to hate on people that want to better themselves rather than support them. I don't know. So, I could be entirely wrong, but that's just the general vibe I get being on social media.
So from my perspective, what was interesting was that in my head, when I was starting the podcast, in my head, I was saying, who needs another podcast? When I actually put it out, people were very supportive and appreciative.
Yeah.
And I'm curious if it was also the same from your perspective, doing Midnight Podcast, starting that, and Space Goods. Were people more so like, what are you doing starting another podcast? Literally in the comments, or was it more so, this is incredible?
Maybe it was just in my head. I suppose like when you put stuff out, you probably always think, well, I certainly did at the start. I thought like, oh shit, like are people going to hate on this? Are people going to think that I'm trying to like be a self-help guru or whatever, which is never the case. But then yeah, the reception has been like 99.5% positive, which is probably more than I expected. And it certainly seems to, people seem to relate to it a lot more than I thought. I mean, it is ultimately like all entrepreneurial guys that kind of watch it, but that's ultimately the audience. Maybe it's just in my head that people don't want people to put stuff out. Cause I don't know, maybe I've had bad experiences in the past when I was like a teenager or whatever, like people taking the piss out of people starting stuff. But I think like the key thing to remember, whether it's an e-com brand or a podcast or anything else, is literally every single thing ever created started at day one.
Yeah.
Granted, the person starting it might have had more money, less money, more experience, whatever. But like every brand ever was a Shopify trial for the first few days. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like every podcast ever had 50 subscribers when it first started or whatever, or less.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. So I think that's like a super important thing to remember, like in life, like literally every single thing starts from zero because I know for a fact there's a lot of people that, and I literally know people that I speak to on like a regular basis, like friends, people I know, whatever, that want to start like a business or a brand or whatever, but they're always saying like, yeah, but I don't know if it's like unique enough or whatever. And it's like, fucking hell, you've been talking about it for 5 years. If you just started something 5 years ago, you'd probably be a millionaire by now. Do you know what I mean? So that's probably more of a problem these days. I think people, I don't know, just lacking self-belief right at the start, because obviously experience breeds confidence, which then like breeds like more self-belief and shit, which is why like even after a major knock, like I spoke about, I still 1,000,000,000% believe that I can build like a monster brand but that's because I've done it before and like I've done it more than once, at least into like a 0 to 1 level. So I can understand why people, you know, get scared right at the start. But then I always try and think back to like when I literally made my first like Shopify website, and well, I can remember it was Gentry Club and it was an absolute piece of shit. But I think because it came from a place of genuine interest and passion, like I wasn't bothered that it was shit because that's what I enjoyed doing anyway. I suppose, yeah, actually, I think a better problem in society, if I'm picking out problems, which I sound like a bloody guru now, is people pretending they're interested in like entrepreneurship or like building an e-com brand. And like, and in fact, I literally have someone I know, it's not a close friend, but like they're a friend who texts me about an hour before this for about the 10th time in a row in the past 3 months, asking me for business ideas. I'm like, mate, you've trained for 5 years to be a dentist. I'm probably going to give away who he is if he listens to this now. Why are you suddenly pretending you're an entrepreneur? Because you're not. Like, he's not an entrepreneur. I wouldn't back him to start an e-com brand. I just wouldn't. And that's not to say people can't change careers and stuff, but like, if you're literally texting someone saying, please give me an idea to start a business, then you're not a fucking entrepreneur. It's just a fact. So yeah.
Sound like Elon. A problem.
Yeah, maybe. But there's just like a lack of self-awareness. Like it's become like sexy and cool to build an e-com brand. Like there's a lot of other businesses within entrepreneurship that isn't building an e-com brand or an agency. They're just like the buzzwords. I don't know. So, well, certainly in this like Twitter sphere, podcast sphere, because they're probably like the most accessible businesses to start. But like, I don't know, maybe some guy should go and start a coffee shop or some shit and become super successful doing that. Do you know what I mean? I think because these sort of things, like obviously brands like Gymshark, I don't know, like it's a billion other examples, but like they get a lot of media attention because they are grown, you know, via online platforms. So like, you know, you get founders of generally like e-com brands and stuff that go on podcasts, like even much bigger podcasts like Diary of a CEO, etc. they're generally like tech startups or like econ brand founders because they're kind of sexy and relevant. But, you know, 99% of businesses, I'm making this up on the spot, but probably aren't econ brands in terms of like just businesses the world over. There's a million ways to make a million quid, so to speak. And that's if you even want to be an entrepreneur, which, by the way, I think most people absolutely should not be because it's excruciating. So, yeah, I don't know where I'm going with that, but I just think that's something that kind of confuses me. People maybe getting pulled in for the wrong reasons because they see like the potential freedom or wealth, inverted commas, and then they pretend they have any interest in like building an econ brand, but it's like it's clearly not something they're remotely actually interested in.
It shows you the power of media and the power of people talking about things that get other people interested in those things that they might not have had any interest in to begin with, had someone not started talking about them. And that's why I try to use this platform to speak about mental health and speak about meditation and speak about loving yourself and speak about these things that 3 years ago when I started doing e-com, I had zero care about, zero idea about. But now these things that I'm talking about are my truths. And I hope by speaking about them, one person could be like, oh, why is he speaking about loving yourself? Why is he speaking about meditation? Because those are the things that really transform me. And those are the things that can transform you too at the deepest level. Not starting a Shopify store, which could if you want it to be and if that is authentic to you.
Yeah, exactly. And I think like you figure out what your, and again, I sound like a bloody self-help guru now, but like, I know that's a bit of a habit actually, because Iman picked up on that as well, I think, in my pod. I think because I'm so conscious of the amount of like actual full of shit fake gurus there are these days that have never done anything, but they're giving advice. So I've probably fallen into the trap of like, before I say any bit of advice, take it with a pinch of salt or whatever. But yeah, I guess to preface what I'm saying, I'm just purely basing it on my experience, which I think at this point it is a decent amount of experience to speak about certain things. So yeah, I think if you've done something for like 2 months, you probably shouldn't be giving advice on it. But if you've been doing it for like 10 years, like I have, certainly from like when I started designing logos and shit, then I think it's like fair. But anyway, I think people figure out, and it's so cliche, but it's so true. Like if you don't try things, you never find what you're actually passionate about or like good at. And I've always naturally, I feel like I'm fortunate to be quite good at a lot of things in terms of like, I used to be obsessed with rowing. That was like one of the first things like I really tried and discovered a passion for. But ultimately I also discovered I didn't want to do it long term because I didn't love it enough and it didn't fit where I wanted to go longer term when I discovered like my next passion, I suppose, which was like brand building and stuff. And even like music and stuff. I used to play a lot of music. We haven't spoken about that as much, but at one point I wanted to be in a band, but then I realized I was self-aware enough to know that I wasn't actually good enough to be like a professional singer or whatever, nor did I want to be because I wasn't good enough. And I think you end up gravitating towards the stuff that you know that you're good at because you figure out what you have like a natural, you know, find the things that you tend to be better than your peers at. And then it's like, oh, maybe I should explore that a bit more. And like for me, that was like a general knack for like putting together Shopify websites right at the very start. And then you delve into that and you get a bit of confidence through your first few sales or whatever it is. And that process can take years, but I think, and again, I'm speaking like very broadly here, like stereotyping, but the problem I think this like current generation has is it feels like not a lot of people are willing to try things in like their teenage years or whatever, because they're so scared of like, because social media is so ripe with like judgment and now more than ever, you see what everyone else is doing all the time. So like, if you're like a 14-year-old now, and I spoke about this on a recent pod, and like say you think you might be interested in, I don't know, web design or whatever, but all your mates just play football, but you actually secretly fucking hate football, you're probably just going to keep playing football and not trying web design, for example. And then you get to like 18, most people go to uni, certainly in the UK, like that's kind of the embossed path now, which is fine because I don't actually have a better suggestion unless you build a business or something. But then you go to uni, you get around a certain crowd, which again, you don't really choose that crowd because you just go to the same uni. And then you probably find yourself in a job at 21 And then by the time you got to 21, kind of all you know is like your work colleagues and your friends that live in the same place. And then I think it gets harder to discover like your potential passions and go all in on something. And again, me and my flatmate spoke about this on a recent Q&A podcast. And I think it's a very interesting topic because looking back, I guess I was quite fortunate to absolutely know from the core of my being that first I wanted to be an entrepreneur from like the age of 12. But then by like, I was actually relatively late in like the e-com sphere, to be fair. Like I didn't actually even start doing e-com properly till I was like 19, which compared to like some guys on Twitter is like 10 years late. But then I was also, I guess, certainly not lucky, but fortunate that I had enough success in it that I could quit uni and go all in by like age 21. And then I think the most powerful next step was meeting a load of other people doing better than me and also doing the same shit, which I think is the single most valuable asset you can have in like your early 20s, by the way, is like high quality friends. And by high quality, I mean just people that are interested about similar shit and are generally good people and on a similar path. Because, you know, like one of the most true things in the whole world is you become the average of the five people you hang around with. And like, again, such a cringe cliche or whatever, but it's like painfully true. And I've seen it in friends from school that, and naming no names, but like I'm thinking of a particular person, used to be like top of the class in everything. Then he went to uni and he won't say this, but I will, got in with the wrong crowd. You kind of the druggy crowd, drinking all the time. And now he's working like a minimum wage job on a shop floor. And I think that's such a shame more than anything. And like, if he's happy, fine, whatever. But I think if you asked him honestly, is he happy doing what he's doing? He'd probably say no. And yeah, ultimately that's like case in point of, at least from my third party perspective, hanging around with not necessarily the best people. And yeah, falling into kind of their path. So yeah, I don't know. I feel like I'm preaching.
It's funny.
But on reflection, I think it's so interesting to look back at like my late teenage and early 20s years, because I was, yeah, the single best thing that ever happened to me was meeting a lot of people that were like-minded.
Yeah.
And it's the most valuable asset I have now, I think, is my network, because you can lose everything, like money, you can lose your fucking legs, but if you've got genuinely good friends that, you know, are doing a similar shit or on the same page in life, driven, motivated, then it's hard to like ultimately lose, I think. And no one really speaks about this. Everyone's always like, how much does the job pay? No one speaks about like other factors of wealth, so to speak, that should be considered. Like who are you hanging around with in that job? Like where is the job? Does it give you time freedom to do other things? I don't know. I just think it's an interesting concept that people seem to, I'm really going off on one now, but people seem to quantify the value of most jobs and opportunities purely by money.
Mm.
Completely dismissing every other variable, i.e. like time freedom, location freedom, do you enjoy it, are you around certain type of people that might lead to certain opportunities. And it's because they're harder to define, because you can't put a number on like the value of, I don't know, being in a big city, for example, or the value of being able to travel to Bali because your work is online and then you meet mm-hmm. 50 people that change your life or something. I don't know.
I think the concept of time billionaire is one we don't often think about, which is that if you're under the age of, let's call it 30, you have more than a billion seconds in your lifetime left.
Didn't actually know that, to be fair.
On the average. So, you know, everyone's trying to be a billionaire, and a lot of people are out here trying to make $1 billion, but they don't realize they have a billion seconds left. And would you trade places with Warren Buffett right now?
No, definitely not. Yeah, I've heard that many times. So true. Because he's going to die pretty soon, probably. He's old.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. I think about that a lot, to be fair. Like, well, not about Warren Buffett, but like, I don't know. I'm sometimes so aware of like the like fragility and what's the word? Like scarcity of time, that it sometimes like fucking freaks me out, and I'm like, oh shit, like I'm getting old. I mean, we're all getting old at the same pace, that is a fact, but sometimes it feels like it's getting quicker and quicker. Like your parents always say, like, oh, time goes quicker when you're older, and I certainly feel like it does.
Yeah,
definitely. So, since COVID,
well, the reason for that is that when you were 5 years old, turning six was 1/6 of your life. Yeah. When you're 30, turning 31 is 1/31st of your life, which is a much smaller percentage that feels quicker. It makes sense from a psychological perspective.
Yeah, it does.
And also,
it's crazy though.
There's less newness that occurs when you're...
That's very true.
Yeah, so when new things occur, everything, it feels different. It feels like time is moving slower because you're seeing this and then this and this. But once you settle into a routine and you have children, you see the same patterns over and over again, which can make time feel as if it's moving quicker.
Yeah, it's very true. Yeah.
So talk to me about, I mean, you can take that to live a more authentic life. And
yeah, for sure.
But talk to me about your four pillars: health, wealth, love, and happiness. I think they're pretty common, but, and I'm sure we're going to get some
on the 44 podcast. Yeah, I feel like, geez, it's not, certainly not something, it's not a term I've coined or anything. It definitely is like a pretty well used like analogy, but I think the reason I spoke about that on the 44 podcast was probably because I'd just come out of a relationship at the time. I spoke quite a lot about that, blah, blah, blah. But like that gave me an interesting perspective on, because I suppose that was the first time in my life where like a significant part of my existence wasn't like building a business. Probably for like the first time ever, really, other than like health. Like I'd always been very, in like my early, like teenage years, early 20s, certainly, like health and I guess pursuing wealth ultimately, like had always been quite high on the agenda. Like health has probably fluctuated, but I've always remained fit and trained a lot. And yeah, I suppose having a taste of like, I don't know, fucking getting loads of money when I was in my early 20s, like obviously, you know, it's obviously relative. Like I didn't fucking make 100 million quid, but like driving my dream car and stuff. And then you realize that that doesn't actually fulfill you. And then it's like, oh shit, what does fulfill me? Oh, building brands and being creative fulfills me. But then you realize that even that process can be pretty lonely sometimes if you don't have good friends. And then you realize that having good guy friends is great, but then sometimes it's nice to have a gorgeous girl in my life and have that feminine energy. And then you realize, well, I kind of want everything. And I think the full package is like, you know, health, wealth, love, and happiness. I suppose like most people say like the first three equals like the last, which is probably true. Like health, wealth, like love equals probably the truest potential form of happiness. But something I think I spoke about this with my flatmate again recently. There's definitely like seasons for the pursuit of each one.
Definitely.
Maybe not. I'm not saying, I think you could, I think someone said this on Twitter or whatever, like a load of wise people on there. You can probably like pursue two at a time. And I think for me, at least, like health is always the number one on there without any question. And I suppose as a baseline, it says like just physically not dying, like not falling off a cliff, hopefully not getting any mad illness. But like even just for me, staying like in good shape, which I did lose a bit of, to be fair, like this time last year. Staying in good shape is always like high priority in terms of like being physically fit, not just looking decent, but I think it all plays into like feeling better about yourself and doing better work and better mental health. So that's like always the number one, and that's kind of a constant regardless. But then I think the reality is for most people, particularly entrepreneurs, like 20s and 30s and particularly 20s is when like the positioning yourself to build wealth, because again, while I love being creative and shit, I'm very conscious of the fact that having a lot of money gives you freedom, and that also can lead to many great things down the line. So yeah, for me, like I suppose my 20s, I think, and I'm sure a lot of my 30s as well, but certainly while I'm like right in the middle of my 20s, actually just over 60% through, to be fair, I think like health and wealth are the top two priorities. I guess love, in terms of like the pillars and shit, I suppose love has many different like avenues, but I think most people when they're referring to that mean like relationships. Certainly I do when I view it that way. had never had a relationship until my previous relationship, which was like 18 months long, which is long for me, but I guess some people have way longer ones. It definitely taught me a lot about relationships, like romance, how certain women think and shit. Not to stereotype. But yeah, I suppose I think that ultimately ended because we weren't aligned. And looking back, it probably had to end because, well, certainly that person wasn't aligned with the way I was prioritized. And I wanted to prioritize the pursuit of health and wealth over the next, you know, 5-10 years. And I'm not saying that you can't have that. Like, if I met a girl tomorrow that I thought was amazing and like could fit into that vision, then I'm absolutely open to it. Like, DM me. But I think there's seasons for it, basically, like particularly as an entrepreneur. But for me, yeah, I would like to think, like, you know, when all is said and done, whatever that means, maybe, you know, when I'm like 35, whatever, maybe I can have the full package. I don't know. That's just kind of how I see my life going. Like, I spend the next 5 to 10 years really focused on, yeah, granted, like pursuing wealth, but also enjoying kind of building a career and business and something cool. And then I think naturally when I've, you know, earned respect of myself and my peers and people in an industry and hopefully done something massive and ultimately like proven myself in like the entrepreneurial game, I think that's when I'll also be the most like true version of myself, because I'll have done, you know, I've been through the shit, the trenches, the ups and downs, and hopefully be like a better person to have a great relationship at some point as well. I'm not saying that has to wait till I'm 35, but yeah, I think, you know, I don't see the point in like potentially like becoming a billionaire or whatever, like extreme example, and being like massively overweight or like anorexic, for example, which again is obviously stereotyping, but, and then, you know, the idea of being like a billionaire, but being 50 years old and like just like slamming hookers in Thailand or some shit doesn't appeal to me. Cause I mean, you see in like TV programs or like movies and shit, like the badass old guy who's like really rich but has no family or whatever. I don't know. I just don't think that doesn't look like the full package to me. So yeah, it's just something I've started to kind of mull over and think about, I guess, as I've got a little bit older. Because certainly when I think most guys particularly, and just like entrepreneurs in general, in like their early 20s, particularly like the early 20s, like when they first come out of, well, they first start making their own money or whatever, probably only think about, like, oh, I want to get rich. I want to fucking pop bottles in a club. I want to get the supercar and shit. But then when you have a little taste of that, which I've had, and granted, I love all that stuff, or not the popping bottles, but like supercars and shit and whatever, I'll get another one in the future. But then you realize that there's more to life. And yeah, I suppose having the full package, or that pursuing the full package long-term, is probably what's going to make you most fulfilled and happy eventually. But that's a very long answer, I suppose. And I think there are seasons and times where one or two take priority over another one or two.
Mm.
And hopefully there'll be a harmonious end where everything is achieved and you have it all.
So on the love piece, you didn't mention yourself, your relationship and loving yourself. Why not?
Oh, well, I mean, I suppose, well, because I think that's kind of separate. Well, maybe not separate, but that can happen. I think you can do that alongside like the health and wealth piece. But I suppose I just meant literally the way I was viewing it was like having a partner in life, where, you know, whether that's a guy, a girl, for whoever, like romantically. I suppose like the whole loving yourself like thing is something I've maybe like struggled with a little bit, because I don't know, I probably like deep down love myself and shit, but I don't know, maybe it's just like, yeah, I don't know. I reckon I've always been driven more by negativity than positivity. I don't know if that plays into like feeling uncomfortable, like loving myself or even speaking about it. I guess it instinctively to me, probably for a million bad reasons, like kind of, I instinctively think of like, kind of hippie culture, like, oh, fuck off, like, love myself, all this bullshit. But obviously it's not bullshit, because if you don't love yourself, then you can't really love anyone else. And I probably learned a lot of that through my relationship, which went bad because I was in a very bad place and probably became a shit version of myself and didn't care about myself. And it probably reflected on the other person feeling a certain way and you know, ultimately going our separate ways. But yeah, I think it's definitely important. And there's probably more of a narrative around that now on like social media and stuff than there has been. I think particularly like post-COVID, because people have realized that life's kind of hard if you hate yourself or you don't take care of yourself. But yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting witnessing how people use negativity to fuel them and people use positivity to fuel them. And I don't think one way is better than the other, but I do think that one way kind of burns out. Or maybe it doesn't. So like, for example, Michael Jordan was fueled by negativity a lot. You saw it in his Hall of Fame speech. He's still being upset at reporters and calling them out 20 years after they wrote whatever they wrote, which is fascinating. Then on the other end, you have someone like Mr. Beast who just wants to give back and help people. And you saw that on Joe Rogan. He was very much just wanting to spread love being his message. And he didn't seem driven by like a hatred towards certain people. And I think you can achieve greatness both ways. But my question is like, which is going to make you feel more fulfilled and happier? It's like holding on to the anger or holding on to the love?
I don't know. I think that sort of shit is like, maybe it's a combination of genetics and like upbringing or whatever.
Could be. But
I don't know if he can change that. Like,
I changed it. So I know I can. It's crazy.
Yeah, like, maybe. I mean, yeah, I probably need to do even more psychedelics to figure that one out maybe. But maybe that's something I need to work on probably. Like even my like self-care, which is like going to the gym and shit, stems from like kind of like a fuck you attitude to like maybe like, I don't know, my ex-girlfriend or like my previously chubby self. I mean, I was never that fat, but like looking back. And then I don't know, like I kind of, yeah, like I'm reading David Goggins' book actually right now. I tweeted about it last night. I feel
he's fueled by a lot of hate.
Oh, 100%. And it's kind of like that savage mindset. Like I think you'd be hard pressed to turn him around to like self-love and stuff. Maybe he's too far gone. But yeah, I mean, maybe I could. I suppose I've only ever really known being like driven from not like hatred, but like negativity, like people saying I couldn't do it or whatever, or like looking in the mirror, be like, you're a little bitch if you don't do it sort of thing.
Yeah, I think that I feel it burns out quicker. You're more likely to burn out if you're fueled by the negative. And if you're fueled by love, it's never ending and you want to give more. Think about the period of your life when you felt most love. What do you want to do? You want to give more love. And it's a different type of energy that comes across. And I implore you to try it out and see feeling love for yourself and the ways in which you can go about doing that, because it's transformed my life. Literally, I started by writing, I love myself 100 times every day.
Yeah, I saw you tweeted about that. Yeah.
If you can't do that, if that sounds weird to you, it probably means that there's something there that you really need to solve. And
I do agree.
That's something that 4 years ago I would have found really cringe and really like, why is this person doing that? But I know it's my truth and I know it's helped me so much. So I just want to put that out and spread that message.
Yeah, I've always found it hard even saying like I love you to my parents, to be honest.
What do you think that is?
A deep curveball. I think I spoke about this with mates before, and I don't think I'm the only one. I don't know if it's like toxic masculinity or whatever. Like I mean, like on the phone, like I could say it on text, or like in person. I don't know. I've always found that quite difficult. In fact, I even found it difficult with my girlfriend previously, I think, and she, when it definitely was true at the time, as to how I felt, I don't know what it is. Maybe it's almost like a, I don't know, it's definitely linked with the same thing, and it's probably something I should figure out.
And I think as you go deeper
into... I need to go on an ayahuasca retreat and like hang upside down in a rainforest or something.
No, but I think as you go deeper and deeper into your own company, into the mushroom space, into psychedelics in general, I think more of that will come out and it will fuel even greater creativity, greater design. And I think it's almost like it's guaranteed to happen with how you're positioning yourself, which is interesting because it's like maybe a deeper part of you knows that this is your way of getting closer to self-love.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, I think a lot of things in life, like you can kind of like, you know, in your gut, if something's right or not. Mm-hmm. And like this space and like the way I'm being creative again, like with this new brand and stuff, definitely feels like a more true, authentic version of myself, whatever. Again, I'm like almost cringing saying it because that's probably part of the problem.
Because you're judging yourself. You're giving yourself hate. And no one's here. No one's giving you hate, but you're in your head giving yourself hate.
Yeah. So I think you are right. I'll definitely do my best. I feel like I'm already doing definitely like my best creative work in a while. And yeah, maybe if I start getting love back when it turns like customers and shit, maybe that can be the catalyst for, I don't know, fucking being a less cynical person. I don't know.
Slowly removing the cynical part from the optimism, slowly but surely.
Yeah, I'll probably end up becoming like a monk or some shit and have like a statue made in my name, like a pink neon statue or some shit. It's like the 20-year vision. Change the whole world.
I love it, man.
Yeah. I don't know.
I'm so looking forward to seeing how the journey unfolds for you and how you continue to progress internally and externally, because I'll be following along the journey, and I'm really grateful for you today for spending this time with me and being authentic and real and vulnerable and honest. Is there anything else you'd like to touch on before we go to a close?
Not really. I mean, I could probably speak. I'm very good at speaking. I can probably speak for hours on any pod. So yeah, I guess that's why I do them. I find it therapeutic and it's interesting to self-reflect and then have something to look back on, which is like a time capsule. I think like podcasts are the greatest like medium of content because they're a conversation time capsule, which I've just come up with on the spot, if that makes sense. Because like in 10 years, imagine watching back a podcast from when before you started a business, speaking about like a business idea or something, and then 10 years later, I don't know, everything's different. It's so much more in depth than a picture or something.
So couldn't agree more.
But no, I think we spoke about a lot. Hopefully I didn't come across like a misogynistic idiot, like some people might like to think. But yeah, I just genuinely speak my mind and hope that it makes sense, because I know I can ramble. But yeah, there's a lot in my head, and sometimes it feels hard to articulate it. But I think that's a skill that everyone should get better at. It's just speaking their mind. So
yeah,
I'm trying to do that.
Where can people connect with you further?
I guess Midnight Podcast, and then I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Mathucius, MATTHUCIUS, which isn't my second name. It's just like a play on the Chinese philosopher Confucius. Because a lot of people have asked me like, what is your second name? Hucius or some shit. I'm like, no. But yeah, I guess on there, I tweet a lot of, Instagram's more like, I mean, Instagram's basically a dating app. So, well, I've kind of put a little bit about like the business and stuff on there. But yeah, Twitter more recently has become like my outlet for building in public, I suppose, so to speak. But then yeah, like Instagram, if you want to go stalk my shit from like 10 years ago, because it's actually funny, like I've posted about all the brands I've ever made on Instagram at some point. So like, it's again, that's quite an interesting like time capsule.
Yep.
I always think like this generation is like the first generation that will have a documentary of their life in pictures through social media, which is kind of scary and amazing at the same time. So yeah, I just hope my account never gets disabled and I can never look back. But that's where you can find me. Yeah. Twitter, Instagram, podcast.
We'll put both those links below, and I really appreciate you taking the time here. Thank you.
Yeah, sweet. And then spacegoods.com, of course, is my new venture.
We'll throw it all below.
Yeah, sweet. All right. Enjoy.